Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. I'm on the telephone today because we're trying to correct some technical difficulties. I should be back to a regular microphone on the next broadcast. We're going to talk about how vitamin D is linked to low virus death rate. That's from Anglia Ruskin University and published in the peer-reviewed journal, the Journal of Aging Clinical and Experimental Research. We have about 9 important articles that can help us live a longer life, save our life, on today's program. Then I have a backup of articles that I've been writing and researching with Richard Gale. Today we're going to share one of those. Why the World Health Organization deserves our distrust. There is nothing that they say that I believe. They are completely contemptible of truth. They are completely controlled by political and ideological agendas, including pushing vaccines. So we are going to deconstruct them in a scholarly and methodical manner, fully referenced. The article is posted on PRN.fm. Please share it with everyone that you can, because at some point in the very near future, and I'm hoping I'm wrong, they will have a not properly tested, not proven safe, nor even effective vaccine, and the people behind it will be people connected more often than not to Tony Fauci or the Bill Gates Foundation or one of their supporting organizations, and it will be mandated. And behind that will be something that we're seeing that I'm very concerned about, and that is corona monitoring, where they actually have stated they have the right to come into your home and take your children if they're positive for the antibodies. We are facing a completely totalitarian approach by an artificially constructed pandemic. Why is it artificially constructed? Not because the coronavirus is not an original killer. It is, and far more infective than the other viruses that we've seen in the past. It also is, but it's also far less deadly, except if you're a person who has multiple comorbidities, meaning if you're older and you have a lot of other diseases. But then they weren't doing the test. No tests, no autopsies on the majority of the people who died. They simply attributed it to corona. We've also heard from doctors, including a member of Congress, a medical doctor, stating that they're pressuring them to put corona on all death certificates. We heard last week from funeral home directors in a phone call where they were not aware they were being recorded that, yeah, we're told to put corona on every death that comes in, no matter what the cause of death. And so this is by intent. Why? Why would they be falsifying the mortality numbers? Quite simple, because then you can control the people by mandates and edicts. None of those, by the way, edicts by any governor can transcend the power of the Constitution when it comes to this. Sooner or later, there will be some brave lawyers who will come forward and challenge it. We are meeting right now with some constitutional lawyers to do exactly that, because I know what's coming. The average person who didn't pay attention to any of the public health risks in the past, they will be mandated. And you saw what happened after the mandation of the Gardasil and other vaccines. We'll talk about that today. So that's our story for today. We always start, however, with the latest on health and healing. A new study has found an association between low levels of vitamin D and higher numbers of COVID-19 cases and death rates across 20 European countries. The research led by Dr. Lee Smith of Anglia Ruskin University and Peter Christian led, by the way, this is Queen Elizabeth Hospital. They led them to publish in the peer-reviewed journal. And what it means, quite simply, is that there have been previous observational studies have reported an association between when you don't have enough vitamin D, when you have a low level, and susceptibility to acute respiratory tract infections. Vitamin D modulates the response of white blood cells, preventing them from releasing too many inflammatory cytokines. The COVID-19 virus is known to cause an excess of pro-inflammatory cytokines, what we call cytokine storms. Italy and Spain have both experienced high COVID COVID-19 mortality rates, and the new study shows that both countries have lower average vitamin D levels than most northern European countries. This is partly because people in southern Europe, particularly the elderly, avoid the sun. They have a lot of problems getting vitamin D into their body. A lot of them have spent a lifetime smoking. Therefore, their lungs are substantially compromised. They're generally overweight. They don't exercise. Therefore, they suffer from diabetes. So you see, only when you pull back and you look at the completeness of a person's lifestyle in relationship to a pandemic or an infection and what is susceptible, because what they have not done, they have not shown you what a healthy group of people living in Spain or in Italy would be for people that exercise, have low body mass index or fat, especially abdominal fat, who do not smoke and have not smoked or drank throughout their life, who have a good diet. Now, those people would be the people that you would match against the people that you find dying in the largest single numbers, average age 80. So take a look at the other people. Now, I say that's very important. Now, that's real science. That's the kind of science those of us who are actual scientists, not these pimps for the pharmaceutical industry or the U.S. DA, the FDA, and National Institutes of Health engage in. I trust nothing coming out of any government scientific research lab because I know how corrupt they are. And who tells me how corrupt they are? People who have worked there, people like Dr. Dean Burke and others that I have interviewed over the years. So the trouble is we're making the mistake of believing as if it's absolutely set in stone and incontrovertible, the words from these official sources. They're not accurate. They have missed every single point. They told us up to death rates equal to that, 100 million or more, of the 1918 flu. It didn't happen. And then it was 200,000 deaths. It didn't happen. In fact, if you subtract the actual comorbidity, meaning the reason they actually died, their emphysema or heart disease and cancers, and just look at those who could have died just from the coronavirus, you're no more than a normal flu season. So now they have to cover themselves, because think of the downside if it were reported that we lost millions of jobs, some permanently in their field, millions of businesses had to close up, people committed suicide, people lost every penny they have and now are at the mercy of debt collectors who have no mercy, all being done completely legally because these people paid Joe Biden, the credit card people, the bank, the payday loan lenders, the Clintons. These people own Congress, left and right, doesn't matter. They own the presidencies because they're smart enough to figure out if you put enough money in someone's pocket, they owe you. The general return can be anywhere from 100 to 1 to 1,000 to 1. That's why the military-industrial complex, pharmaceutical complex, the energy complex, that's who controls our society. But we're not honest. We can't say that. We're not allowed to. But we are. We're telling you. So something as simple as vitamin D could help prevent those from dying because of what it does in the body. We know for a fact, and this is from the actual study, quote, vitamin D has been shown to protect against acute respiratory infections and older adults. The group most deficient in vitamin D are also the ones most seriously affected by COVID-19. That's from the actual peer-reviewed study. That's the scientist saying that, not me. Now, ask every nurse, ask every physician working in a hospital, is your protocol outside of killing people with the respirators and in critical care, is it to give them hyperbaric oxygen, which could save their lives? No. Intravenous vitamin drips? Nope. How about just vitamin D? Is that allowed in any hospital in America? Would you be fired? Would you be crucified for giving a patient vitamin D? Jesus, why don't we call the medical community what it is, but we're afraid to? We make them out to be heroes. Anything but for the majority. Quote, a previous study found that 75% of people in institutions such as hospitals and care homes were severely deficient in vitamin D. We suggest it would be advisable to perform dedicated studies looking at vitamin D levels in COVID-19 patients with different degrees of disease severity, end quote. And that's the leading urologist at Queen Elizabeth Hospital but we're not going to pay attention to him. We'll pay attention to Anthony Fauci or Bill Gates. By the way, we have a lot of lawyers listening to this program. There's a video of Bill Gates out there. It's making the rounds. It shows him giving the oral polio vaccine to an Indian child. Why don't you check the medical records and see, is that legal? Was he practicing medicine without a license? It doesn't matter how much he paid for. It doesn't matter how, you know, what his contacts are. Is that legal? Because last time I checked, it wasn't legal for a non-medical professional to be administering a vaccine. Pharmacists, nurses, and physicians. Unless, and this is in India, mind you, I'd be curious about that. Also from Georgia State University comes a study about researchers find certain foods common in diets of U.S. adults with inflammatory bowel disease. Really? How about all foods in the average American diet are inflammatory? Quote, foods such as French fries, cheese, cookies, soda, and sports and energy drinks are commonly found in the diets of U.S. adults with inflammatory bowel disease. This was done at the Institute for Biochemical Sciences at Georgia State University. And they analyzed the National Health Interview Survey to determine the food intake and frequency of consumption and then inflammatory bowel disease. This is published in the Peer Review Journal PLOS ONE. Yeah. Just go to the simple part of this. Junk food, which is almost 95% of the American diet, contributes to inflammatory bowel disease and also arthritis and heart disease and cancer and dementia and Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and ALS and poor circulation and destruction of our arteries and GERD and ileitis, colitis, spastic colon, irritable bowel. Yeah. Why can't we be honest about that? Because we can't be honest about anything in our society. The media is not honest. The individuals are not honest. We're in collective, individual, and group denial about, how about everything? So, next time you eat your French fries, don't complain when you find that your triglycerides have skyrocketed, your low-density lipoproteins are climbing up, homocysteine is elevated, and C-reactive protein is about to give you a heart attack or stroke. You see, in America, everyone is right about everything. Everyone's right. The preacher's right. Just pray and you'll be saved. Everyone is right. The doctor, take your chemotherapy. The dietitian, moderation in all things. The politician, trust me. The news media, believe us. They're all right. And we're right when we say trust none of the above. They're all wrong, almost all the time. Now, we're all right. The difference is the outcome. It's not good that if you were right, like my older brother, thinking that you could smoke 3-pack cigarettes a day for 50 years, nothing happened to you. It was in the 52nd year that the terminal lung cancer came. There was no sense of, wow, did I get that one wrong? No, you got rewarded. Unfortunately, death was your reward. You see, no one's ever wrong in our society. No one can be wrong. Our belief systems, our arrogance, our hubris, our indifference, our closed-mindedness, our intellectual elite who are never wrong about anything, they have no humility whatsoever. The political and opportunists and the agendas, whether it's capitalism, communism, Marxism, any ism, they're always right, even when they're wrong. When was the last time you heard anyone say, I'm sorry, I was wrong, unless under duress? So that's why nothing's going to change. Nothing has changed, not in my 50 years in the public arena, except for the tiny little group of people, and I mean tiny, that's willing to say, yeah, we got it wrong. Let's start learning from other people's lessons since they're not willing to learn from their own. So you eat the average American diet, you will die in time from diseases that have nothing to do with the aging process. And you will go to your deathbed with that last lamb chop or French fry or chocolate eclair somewhere in the back part of your throat one last gulp, one last taste bud stimulation, one last little euphoric oh-ah, and lights out. People would rather die with their orthodoxy than be saved with something that challenges it. That's the bottom line. By the way, for those of you who are still capable of making right choices and caring about the positive outcome, University of Barcelona had a really interesting story. A mentally well person, as they age, refers to how they perceive their everyday existence, if their outlook is positive or negative, which in turn makes their life pleasant or unpleasant. A positive feeling of emotional well-being allows people to live fully and feel integrated in society. Moreover, people enjoying good mental health are better they are better prepared to recover from sudden illness or change or misfortune. I just did a two-hour special on this. Hopefully, it'll be posted today or tomorrow. It's a whole two-hour lecture. It deals with, are you breaking down or are you breaking through? Are you looking at life as a scarcity or of an abundance? Because I take every bad problem, I talk about it, I face it, I identify it, I won't change it, I won't alter it, I won't make you feel good about that. I'm not going to touch things with a silk glove. I'm just going to say, here's what it is. Just be honest, like a child would. But then turn around and say, now that you have at least an option of knowing the truth, here's a mirror, and it's not photoshopping what your life is. Take a careful look at every part of your life, what works, what doesn't work, what you should keep, what you should give away, what you should surrender from the past, what you should embrace in the past, what you need today to go forward in a more healthy and enlightened way. Are you working on happiness, or are you just happy? Those who work on it never find it. Those who are never need to go search for it. They have it. Are you positive or negative in your disposition? Are you angry at other people who are smarter, better, happier than yourself, or are you happy for other people who are happy? We have a lot of this negative trajectory towards people who are doing what others wish they would but could, don't have the discipline and desire to do so. Well, we're going to make one of those two choices. There's going to be an outcome to each one. For those of you who think, oh my God, the coronavirus, I'm stuck in this house or this apartment, I've run out of money, I've got nothing, blah, 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 then you've broken down. That means your DNA is going to turn off from healing. It means that you're going to alter your whole perception. That means your cells are going to start producing what you don't want an outcome, and then you become what you fear. Or the very same person could say, yeah, I don't like how this happened. I don't like how I'm a victim of this, but also I participate in this victimization. When did I stop saving money? When did I stop buying what I didn't need? When did I say no to the credit cards and tore them up? When did I live within my means? When did I move to a place I could live within my means instead of living in New York City and other places that I couldn't afford to? When did I pretend that somehow being around all this artificial stimulation, this hyperkinetic energy, was a good thing to be and a place to live in? When was this a good place to raise my kids? Are there better places that I chose not to, by intentional neglect, to move to those places? You see, that's when you become aware of the mistakes you've made. You go through a sense of self-humiliation and embarrassment, and then you say, okay, that didn't feel good. I don't like how I had that conversation with myself, but I had to have that conversation with myself because I didn't choose to learn anything coming at me. I choose to turn my back on a tsunami as if it wouldn't pick me up and sweep me away. Now I'm going to have a breakthrough. Everything that this crisis created, I can find a way of challenging. I can go above and beyond this crisis. This has galvanized my attention. Nothing else did. Not my heart attack, not my high blood pressure, not my colorectal cancer from eating all that meat that I just couldn't say no to, not my fat belly, not my diminished brain. I chose not to learn any lesson. This has got my attention. Finally, Gary, you were right. I wasn't in enough pain. Now, today, by God, I'm in enough pain, and I'm going to do something. Good. Then think well of what you're going to do, because you're going to write a whole new story. I came up with a concept today, and I'm not saying I'm the first one. There could have been a million people come up with the concept. It's just the first time I've come up with it. There was someone that I was counseling who has a rough time getting over their past and how they've been a victim. And I simply said that there's a point in life where we have to understand whether or not we've gone through proper mourning for that which we've lost, or whether we become a mourning martyr, where our whole life is defined about our suffering and getting even, in which case then you become the victim, not just of what you're angry about, but all your energy's tight and it's not growing, it's not healing, it's not expanding. Therefore, you got to be able to say goodbye to old pains, old hurts. Let them go and embrace what is happening now so you prevent those further and future pains and hurts and circumstances you get yourself into. How many times have people partied after they did something that they got away with that they shouldn't have done in the first place? But one day it comes to an end, and then what do they say to themselves then? Maybe I should have thought through what I was about to say, think, do, eat, smell, drink, participate in before I did it, to look at the likely outcome, which meant that I would have been in a consciously focused mind to intentionally know something that I was refusing to know before. Because we're not in all these crises in America, health crisis, financial crisis, environmental crisis, because we woke up one day and they were suddenly there. My God, how did this happen? How did I? In the middle of the night, someone came in and put, you know, must have sewed 70 pounds onto my body. I don't know how it got there. Yeah, there's only so much denial. Well, now we're in enough pain that the pain is allowing us to get our focus, and let's make it positive focus, not negative. Let's see what we can do so we're no longer in the grip of those people who have no interest in us except to exploit us and commodify us and commercialize us. I think we've seen enough of that, haven't we? So let's make our crisis a lesson to renew our commitment to some higher ideals. Let us pick ourselves up, no matter how far down we have fallen, and work with others. Where you say, neighbor, how can I help you? Friend, I got your back. Let's start caring about each other. Let's make our survival at a higher level of quality of life than our existence groveling at the bottom end of excess consumption. Just an idea. I'd like your thoughts on that. What lessons can you learn, and what lessons have you learned from the crisis we're now faced with? 888-874-8888. 888-874-4888 is our talkback number. I'd like to hear you. I share my views. I'd like to hear your views. Because I take the problems and I don't blink, I don't lie about them, I tell you what they are, but then I go to the solutions for everything. I've given over 88 hours to this anti-aging group of positive solutions to all the crisis that happened in life that gives us an excuse not to do the right thing for ourselves. And now they're getting it, really are. And we're at the end of this study, by the way, at least the on-campus part. That's good. Really positive results. Before we go to the special report, we have Daryl from the Bronx on. Let's see what's on his mind and what he can share with us. Hi, Daryl. You're on.
Gary, one, I'd like to thank you for all the information that you share. And my mom's going to be 100 this year, so I'm waiting for you to release the protocol so that we can keep her around another 50 years.
2 months, it'll be released.
Excuse me?
In 2 months, it'll be released. But, Daryl, the good news is that I've given an overview of the protocol, which includes a lot of it, in a video I made just last week, and it's now posted up on, Jesse, I believe it's posted on PRN FM as of today, right? It's 53 minutes long, and it gives everyone at home who would like to get started and make positive changes, it gives you all of the outline of what you have to do. So go, if it's not up there, it's posted on some site.
PRN.fm.
PRN.fm. Go to PRN.fm and scroll down, and I'm in, you'll know it's the right one because I'm in a walkway with lots of roses growing, and it was about 90 degrees and the sun was in my eyes, so I put on my, I had them on and I took them off my sunglasses. I don't like to squint when I'm on camera. In any case, I give you a long discussion. No, that's on the coronavirus. No, excuse me. That was good information on the coronavirus. This one's on, I'm in front of a big group in a theater, and I gave you all the basics, what you have to know to get started. Okay? Now, also, the results have to come in from independent medical biostatisticians and others who will be analyzing their actual raw biochemical data, the blood workups, and then when I get it all, then I'll publish the results, and I'll read them on the air, and you can download them. It's going to be a big study. Final pub results will probably be 200 to 300 pages long. It's very, very definitive. Okay?
Excellent. Now, with regard to your question,
yes,
I'm learning how much I have had no clue about. I'm learning about myself. I'm learning about monopoly capitalism and how transparent it is. If someone had said to me that Times Square would be totally empty within inside of a day simply because someone said that you need to get off the street, not happening. And yet I watch it every day. So I'm learning how I create my factuality and how I have a chance of creating a reality if I'm willing to follow the rules that the universe presents. So I thank you for your contribution to those rules. One thing I would like to see is I'd like to see you debate Michio Kaku on some of the things that you talk about. And then understand that what they're basing the things that they talk about are inaccurate. So the RT-PCR test or who's getting tested, how accurate is the test, how are they framing the test, all that stuff, people just eating it up without really understanding where they're living, why they're living, and how they're living.
Darryl, I agree. The last time I filmed Michio Kaku up at his university for knocking on the devil's door, our deadly nuclear legacy, and he did a really brilliant presentation, and I appreciated that. Then he and I had a friendly debate at the program director of BAI back, the good program director of BAI back in the 1980s, Andrew, and we had a debate there for about an hour. It was fun. I love to debate. I think the debating allows us, debating in a civil manner, allows us to have the different ideas, because I don't believe there's one truth. I believe there are millions of truths. I believe in a universal truth, but a lot of people stop at the personal truth, which frequently is a biased truth. And I believe that you have to allow the public to decide which, if any, of this discussion they would accept or reject, and then what qualifies a person, what is their support. You know, Michael Moore brings out a new film, and it just gets skewered by the left. And the question is, why? And would Michael be willing to debate environmentalists on the issue, and especially people that I found out he used footage of them that was 11 years old? You know, we had a guy on the show. I don't know if you heard the show earlier in the week. In fact, he was on Tuesday Night Show. And he said, they didn't call me and ask me to film me. They didn't come to my house or my university. They took 11-year-old film clip and used it in the film. Oh, that is something that, in my opinion, is extremely unethical. You don't do that. You don't do that. And then Bill McKibben, boy, did they make him look bad. I mean, really bad. I'm not a supporter of Bill McKibben, but then I find out that he's not and has not been for 5 years pro-biomass, burning of wood chips to create fuel, which is actually very polluting and destroys the trees. But Bill had written many letters and articles against biomass that he wants to embrace. So then, to me, it's very unfair. But you've got to have those debates. You've got to be able to bring all this forward. You know, you've got to bring the information out. We should be far more transparent and have people bring their points of view with good intention. Start off with good intention. Let people show you that, you know, what their truths are. Good point, Darryl. Thank you. Now, the article is entitled Why the World Health Organization Deserves Our Distrust. And if it weren't for the fact that they're behind all of the so-called official science on the coronavirus, then this article wouldn't have been necessary. But the media is not challenging Fauci or Bill Gates or anyone from the pharmaceutical industry. They're supporting them. The New York Times is actually attacking anyone that challenges the benefits of vaccines. Well, I invite anyone from the New York Times. I invite Anthony Fauci. I invite the head of the World Health Organization. Come on the program and debate me. All right? If you're the expert in the world, come and debate me. I open this forum up to debate. Let's hope that they take me up on it. For your sake, let's hope it. Because what they can't handle is highly aware, informed citizen or citizen activists or expert activists who are not there to defend or promote some ideological or financial agenda. That's what you're not hearing in the media. Many more questions are being raised than there are answers being discovered concerning the recent strains of coronavirus. Where and how did it originate? Why is the mainstream media saying it could not have been genetically engineered when the evidence shows to the contrary? That it didn't originate in China, where the evidence shows to the contrary, even though it could have been also contributed from work at Fort Detrick and the University of North Carolina. What is the result of human engineering and manipulation? Because everything shows it wasn't naturally mutated. What are the best tests to determine exposure and infection? Since they haven't been giving tests, only 1% of the American population has been tested. Why are so many infected individuals asymptomatic? Are all elderly people equally susceptible to infection? And how much do comorbidities determine outcomes? Now, these are just several of the important, legitimate questions that still require definitive answers. The ultimate international authority for infectious diseases is the World Health Organization. Because of its acceptance by the world's national governments, it has been extremely successful in its mission. The World Health Organization is the final word in determining whether the spread of a serious pathogen is ruled as a pandemic or not. For the majority of the medical community, the media, and the average person, the World Health Organization is the frontline command post for medical prevention, in their minds, vaccinations or other treatments. Consequently, its rulings are often regarded as the gold standard by which many nations design their health policies and intervening protocols to protect their citizens. So let's be very clear on this. On all matters of global health, the World Health Organization holds the single dominant position. We're currently being told by the Director General of the World Health Organization that the solutions for curtailing the COVID-19 pandemic are self-isolation, distancing, masks, and proper hygiene, and for those in acute stages of infection, ventilation. To date, there is no drug that has been found to be universally safe or effective. Therefore, all efforts with massive funding are being devoted to rapidly getting a coronavirus vaccine on the market. And in this effort, the World Health Organization is a close ally and advocate to the U.S. federal health agencies, notably the CDC and the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease, headed by Anthony Fauci. Most people assume the World Health Organization acts independently from private, commercial, national government interest for the welfare of the world's population. However, our investigation proves that this is just a false assumption. Moreover, the very legitimacy of the World Health Organization as a gold standard of health, in our opinion, is completely questionable. The organization has been accused of conflict of interest with private pharmaceutical companies and mega philanthropic organizations such as the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, as well as being riddled with political alliances, ideologies, and profiteering motives. Who says? Several. An article in the National Review called the World Health Organization, quote, scandal-plagued, quote, wasteful spending, utter disregard for transparency, pervasive incompetence and failure to adhere to even basic democratic standards, end quote. We would also add that its level of incompetence has resulted in serious misinformation about the medical risks of vaccines and other health-threatening chemicals. For example, during the early stages of the COVID-19 outbreak in China, the organization reported it could find no evidence of human transmission. Wow. That's a big gap. Now we know it is perhaps the most transmissible respiratory viral infection encountered in modern medical history. Given the halls of power within the World Health Organization, we are outlining some of the more salient reasons why the organization's declarations about infectious diseases and pandemics and vaccination should be challenged. Let's look at vaccine promotional misconduct. Very few will know that for a long time, the World Health Organization's recommendations for certain vaccines were kept secret. Writing in a 2006 issue of the Journal of American Physicians and Surgeons, Dr. Mark Girard uncovered, quote, scientific incompetence, misconduct, and even criminal malfeasance, end quote, over the intentional inflation of vaccines' benefits while undermining toxic and adverse effects. Dr. Girard was called upon by a medical expert by the French courts in a criminal trial against the World Health Organization after French health officials obliged the organization to launch its universal hepatitis B vaccine campaign. The campaign resulted in the deaths of French children. Consequently, Girard gained access to confidential World Health Organization documents. He notes the World Health Organization, quote, French figures about chronic liver diseases were simply extrapolated from the U.S. reports, end quote. He further accused the World Health Organization serving, quote, merely as a screen for commercial promotion, in particular via Viral Hepatitis Prevention Board, which was created, sponsored, and infiltrated by manufacturers, of course, of the vaccines. Before the current COVID-19 pandemic, there was the H1N1 swine flu scare in 2009 that came and went as a church mouse. However, at the very start of the World Health Organization's fear-mongering of a global contagion that could exceed the death counts of the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic, and based on false assumptions, the fabrications are believed to have originated from the World Health Organization's senior consultant on viral outbreaks, who happens to be one of the world's leading pandemic alarmists, Dr. Albert Osterhaus, who carries the nickname Dr. Flu. Osterhaus is head of the Department of Virology at the Erasmus University in the Netherlands. At the time of the H1N1 pandemic, he was the president of the European Scientific Working Group on Influenza, an organization, you guessed it, funded by the major vaccine manufacturers, including Baxter, MedImmune, Glaxo, Santa Fe, Pasteur, and others. It is that group's agenda to vaccinate the entire world against the swine flu. It was also Osterhaus who transformed an otherwise potentially bad flu season into a global pandemic. The World Health Organization has been criticized harshly in the media for challenging the definition of a pandemic, and in doing so has been charged with benefiting the pharmaceutical industry. Moreover, the British Medical Journal reported that the World Health Organization failed to report conflicts of interest in its H1N1 advisory group. The journal's editor-in-chief, Fiona Godley, wrote, quote, the World Health Organization must act now to restore its credibility, and Europe should legislate, end quote. According to a financial forecast published in J.P. Morgan, the collaboration between the World Health Organization and Osterhaus's group to orchestrate the pandemic would have profited the pharmaceutical industry up to $10 billion. The popular German magazine Der Spiegel reported, quote, the World Health Organization and those in charge of public health, the virologists and the pharmaceutical laboratories, created a whole system around the imminence of a pandemic. There is a lot of money at stake, as well as networks of influence, careers, and whole institutions. And the minute one of the flu viruses mutates, we'd see the whole machine roll into action, end quote. If there is an epidemic, it's an epidemic of conflict of interest. According to former World Bank geopolitical analyst Peter Koenig, about half the World Health Organization budget is derived from private sources, primarily pharmaceutical companies, who manufacture vaccines, but also other corporate sectors, including telecommunications, agrochemical industries. It also receives large donations from large philanthropic organizations. Guess what? Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It is believed, according to Koenig, that the appointment of the World Health Organization's current director, General Dr. Tedros, was due to Gates' influence. Tedros is the former chairman of Gates-funded Gavi Vaccine Alliance. Gavi's sole mission is to vaccinate every child in the world. The World Health Organization and the U.S. and British governments are the primary partners, and the largest funder in the bill is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. There is, in our opinion, little doubt that the World Health Organization is another one of Gates' bought-off entities for furthering his personal agenda to promote vaccines, genetically modified seeds, and chemical agriculture in the developing world. Barbara Fisher at the National Vaccine Information Center estimates that, quote, only about 10% of the total funding provided by Gavi, about $862 million, was used to strengthen health systems in developing countries, such as monitoring sanitation and nutrition, while 80% was used to purchase, deliver, and promote vaccines. The World Health Organization is nothing more than America's poodle. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation's fact sheet for the U.S. government and the World Health Organization, the U.S. is the largest contributor to the global organization. The CDC also provides technical support and has liaison at the World Health Organization's Geneva headquarters and regional offices. In summary, there's a strong rationale to suggest that the World Health Organization, aside from its global health programs in other countries, is largely doing the bidding of the U.S. government to advance corporate interests, meaning vaccines, and Americans' neoliberal hegemony. The World Health Organization's Global Advisory Committee on Vaccine Safety is the group responsible for administering vaccine programs in poor developing nations. It is also responsible for gathering data on incidents of vaccine injuries. Now, this is where it gets interesting. Please listen carefully. Any deaths following vaccination campaigns are ignored and ruled as coincidental. This policy is based upon the erroneous assumption that if no one had died during a vaccine's clinical trials, then the vaccine should be regarded as automatically safe and unrelated to any deaths that might have occurred. Consequently, the World Health Organization's monitoring system is seriously, fatally flawed, not just requiring a major overhaul, but completely dismantled. One of the more controversial incidences is the World Health Organization's collaboration with Bill Gates' funded Gavi Vaccine Alliance campaign to launch the pentavalent vaccine. That means the diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus, hip, and hepatitis B in Africa and later South and Southeast Asia. In India, health officials recorded upwards of 8,190 additional infant deaths annually following the pentavalent vaccination. The World Health Organization's response was to reclassify its adverse event reporting system to disregard infant deaths altogether. Dr. Jacob Polvial, a member of the Indian government's National Technological Advisory Group on Immunization, concluded, quote, deaths and other serious adverse events following vaccination in the third world that use World Health Organization classification are not recorded in any database for pharmacovigilance. It is as if the deaths of children in low and middle income countries are of no consequence, end quote. But what about the guy who runs the show? What about the guy who said that China is doing the best job in the world at this and disregarded that it could be transmitted from humans, we should continue to travel? All the misinformation that was given for almost 6 weeks that has caused America and all other countries to have been contaminated at the level that it has been and the deaths that has been attributed to that. So given the enormous amount of experts in infectious diseases and control, it is astounding that the World Health Organization's current director general is Dr. Tedros. Did you know who he is? He was a leading politician in the militant communist Tigray People's Liberation Front that ruled Ethiopia between 1991 and 2018. Tedros served dual roles. He was the country's health minister and foreign minister. According to the British journalist Thomas Mountain, who has lived in neighboring Eritrea for many years and has reported on the corrupt Tigray regime, Tedros, the current head of the World Health Organization, had a direct role in the atrocities alleged to have been committed by the government. It was Tedros who had been reported to have been responsible for the removal of the Red Cross and Doctors Without Borders following Ethiopia's brutal massacre of the Ogaden citizens of Somalia, which was immediately followed by a cholera outbreak. his approval to head the World Health Organization may have been vetted by Bill Gates. So looking back at his past 3 years at the World Health Organization, Mountain remarks, quote, for almost 3 years he remained quiet about the almost total lack of preparation at the World Health Organization for what numerous panels had warned was inevitable, a highly contagious and deadly virus quickly spreading across the world, end quote. So what exactly qualified him to be the top person heading the most important health organization in the world? How about nothing? Except, oh, unless you're in alliance with powerful people. But there's another darker side to all of what the World Health Organization has been doing. Without doubt, the most nefarious activity conducted by the World Health Organization is its alleged support and distribution of vaccines to poor developing countries that may have been intentionally designed to decrease population rates. How do we know? It's called evidence. Back in 1989, the World Health Organization sponsored a symposium at its Geneva headquarters that we have all of that, quote, anti-fertility vaccines and contraceptive vaccines, end quote. The symposium presented proposals for vaccines that were later discovered to have been laced with sterilizing hormones HCG and estradiol. The former prevents pregnancy and triggers spontaneous abortions and miscarriages, and the latter can turn men infertile. In 2015, the Kenyan Conference on Catholic Bishops reported that its discovery of a polio vaccine laced with estradiol that was manufactured in India and distributed by the World Health Organization. A year earlier, a Dr. Homi Narge from the Kenyan Catholic Doctors Association uncovered a tetanus vaccine specifically administered to women, also distributed by the World Health Organization, that contained HCG hormone, meaning it sterilizes. All of the polio vaccine samples tested all over the country contain HCG, estrogen-related compounds, follicle-stimulating and luteinizing hormones, which will damage sperm formation in the testes. Even more disturbing, this vaccine was going to be administered to children under the age of 5. However, this is not the first time the World Health Organization appears to have made efforts to use vaccination campaigns for depopulation. A decade earlier, in 2004, the World Health Organization, UNICEF, and the CDC launched a vaccination campaign to immunize 74 million African children during a polio outbreak. The initiative encountered a serious obstacle. In Nigeria, laboratory tests on the World Health Organization vaccine samples resulted in the presence of estrogen and other female hormones. And in the mid-1990s, a tetanus vaccine being administered in Nicaragua and in Filipino girls and women in their childbearing years was discovered to contain HCG, which accounted for a large number of spontaneous abortions that were reported by health workers. In 2014, the Economic Times of India published a report that provides details of a joint venture between the World Health Organization and the Gates Foundation to test an experimental HPV vaccine on approximately 16,000 tribal girls between the ages of 9 and 15 unwittingly. The experiment was conducted in 2008, and the vaccine is now what we commonly know as Gardasil. Many of the girls, the report states, became ill, and some died. The following year, the World Health Organization, the Gates Foundation, conducted a similar experiment on 14,000 girls with the HPV vaccine Cervarix. Again, quote, scores of teenage girls were hospitalized. Was this reported anywhere in the American media? No. Investigations led by Indian health officials uncovered gross violation in India's laws regarding medical safety. In numerous cases, there was no consent, and the child had no idea nor the parent what they were being given in the vaccine or why it was given. The Indian Supreme Court has taken up the case against the duo for criminal charges. A more recent scandal erupted during the World Health Organization's Global Vaccine Safety Summit convened this past December. Days before the summit, and we played this on my program, one of the World Health Organization's medical directors for vaccine, Dr. Suma Swamithanan, appeared in a public advertisement touting the unquestionable safety of vaccines and ridiculing parents who speak out against vaccination. She assured viewers that the World Health Organization was in control of matters and monitoring every potential adverse risk carefully. Okay, but we found just the opposite. During the summit, the same doctor acknowledged vaccine health risks and stated, quote, this is her exact verbatim quote, but to a quiet group inside of the World Health Organization, quote, we really don't have any good safety monitoring systems, end quote. Another participant, Dr. Heidi Larson, quoted, quote, we have very wobbly health professional frontline that is starting to question vaccines and the safety of vaccines. When the frontline professionals are starting to question or they don't feel like they have enough confidence about the safety to stand up to the person asking the questions, I mean most medical school curriculums, even nursing curriculums, I mean in medical school, you're lucky if you have a half a day on vaccines, end quote. And a more noteworthy was the statement by Dr. Martin Hal Friede, coordinator of the World Health Organization's initiatives on vaccine research, quote, I give courses every year on how do you develop vaccines, how do you make a vaccine, and the first lesson is while you're making your vaccine, if you can avoid using an adjuvant, please do so. Lesson two is if you're going to use an adjuvant, use one that has a history of safety. And lesson three is if you're not going to do that, think very carefully, end quote. How about this to the doctor and all the other people? And by the way, we have all of your statements, all of you, every single person. So please come forward and tell us with some sense of self-righteousness that vaccines are safe and effective. We will then release all of your statements to show that none of you were confident. How about every vaccine now has an adjuvant, including mercury? We have 3,000 studies on the toxic effects of mercury, on aluminum. That's the current adjuvant. And we have 3,000 studies on the toxic effect of aluminum as an adjuvant. Please show me the vaccine that doesn't have the adjuvant. So on the one hand, you're saying don't use it. On the other hand, you're promoting those that use it. In other words, what the World Health Organization presents to the public contradicts what is discussed behind closed doors. Another example of the veil of secrecy the organization operates within, and I won't even get in today because we don't have time, them supporting depleted uranium when we have evidence to the contrary. And also all of the deaths in Fallujah area were doctors when I was filming the film about American veterans who were damaged by depleted uranium. Doctors giving thousands of photographs of deformed babies, cyclops babies, with an eye in the middle of their head, babies born without a brain, all because of depleted uranium, thousands of babies. Why didn't this story end up anywhere? I presented this before 1,000 of you at the AMCA Theater down on 42nd Street when I premiered the film. Just read the British Medical Journal in 2013, where they state that the World Health Organization intentionally suppressed the scientific evidence of this. So, that's just some of the problems we have. This article, and there's more to read, but I'm out of time. Read the article, download it. It's why the World Health Organization deserves our distrust. Everything is fully documented, fully. The quotes are all accurate. The footnotes has been legally vetted and vetted for its scholarship. So you expect me and others who are aware of the facts just to go along with anything that's said by someone who heads the CDC or the National Institutes of Health or any other agency? Not without questioning, not without challenge. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.